do Tough Talk with Mike Sawyer and Oliver Kopp.
You guys rock!
Woo! MMA Radio, the way you like it. This is Tough Talk.
Our guest today is one of the most charismatic and top heavyweight fighters in the UFC. On May 28th, he fights former heavyweight champion Frank Mir at UFC 130, with the winner taking another giant step towards a title shot. Please welcome Vegas' favorite big man, Roy Big Country Nelson. How you doing today, Roy?
I'm doing great. How you guys doing?
Doing good.
Now, Roy, I understand you spent some time in Seattle last weekend cornering Dan Hardy. Other than the outcome of the fight, did you enjoy your time there?
No, actually, I just went up there Friday night, was there for Saturday, just, you know, to help Dan out, and then that was about it, and then came home Sunday morning, like 7 in the morning, so I really didn't sleep. Yesterday, I took a 7-hour nap.
Jesus, wow. It was a pretty frustrating fight to watch with Anthony just taking Dan down repeatedly. What exactly were you telling Dan between rounds?
Pretty much just use the jab and not get taken down, you know, gonna sprawl and constantly pummel. I think you know, Dan, I can't wait till Dan, you know, comes, lives here in the States, and then starts training with me full time, and then we can work on some wrestling, and then he's gonna be a whole nother beast.
So do you think UFC's gonna give him the chance?
I think he's a bigger star than Tito right now, so I'm going to say probably, yeah.
That's good. Now, as Mike has told us, you're going to be fighting Frank Mir at UFC 130, and I got to tell you, Mike's been running around with a boner ever since that fight got announced. So how excited are you for the fight?
You know what? I just want to fight. You know, I've been out of work for 10 months now, or it will be 10 months when I fight, so I just want to get in there, just rack up a couple wins, and then just get back in the win column, and then start heading towards that title.
Now this is a fight that's been years in the making, really. I mean, I've lived in Vegas now for about 10 or 11 years, and before the Couture's and the Vanderlei's and pretty much every other guy that's moved here, when I got here, there was two names you would always hear, Frank Mir. And you didn't hear Roy Nelson, but you heard Big Country. So it was always you two, the always intriguing matchup. Give us a little background on this. When did you first meet Frank?
You know what? I've probably my little brother actually went to high school with him. So I've known Frank, me personally, probably for 10 or 11 years. So as long as he's been in the UFC, I've known Frank.
And have you guys been friendly? What was your first impression of him?
Yeah, we're always cordial, just for the, you know, the pure fact, like, he was more of the, you know, the fighter guy, and I was more of the grappler. I made my name in grappling while he made it, you know, in the UFC, going up, because I didn't really want to fight until, you know, I think 2004, when I was just annoyed of training a whole bunch of fighters and just, you know, and learned what kind of, you know, what people are in our business, what kind of, you know, douchebags they are, and I just decided to go, you know, take the money myself.
If you consider Frank, he's got very good skills on the ground, but if you look at your Grapples Quest fight from a few years back, it seems like your skills on the ground at least are on the same level, if not some steps over Frank. How do you see the fight going down? Where do you think you have your biggest advantages over Frank?
I think advantages over Frank, I think, you know, from just being, you know, me, I think I have advantages in a lot of different aspects, from ground to striking to I think the biggest one that a lot of, you know, fighters have that don't actually use it is heart. So the only way is you gotta beat me and make me want to stop, and that's not gonna happen. So I think those are the biggest advantages I have. Is just, I think overall, I just think I'm a, I think I have, you know, what's next to, you know, be a champion in the UFC.
Now, the one thing that really struck me in the fight against Junior Dos Santos is he kept coming at you and he couldn't really get you to drop. He really couldn't. And he didn't have a plan B, so it just kept going back to the well over and over and over. It didn't have any success. And you looked, the longer the fight went, it looked more and more like you were having a second wind of sorts. Is that what would, how did it feel for you? I mean, you took so many shots.
I think what happened was, like, first round, you know, like, my knee went down on me. I got hit. Junior just, you know, capitalized on my biggest, you know, my mistake and, you know, jumped on it. And I, you know, when I had him in tough positions in the first round, like up against the fence and walked him across the fence or the cage, and then I didn't capitalize on when I should have. Second round, didn't capitalize on when I should have had a takedown. Third round, I just didn't put punches together. You know, I just threw one shot at a time, and Junior definitely, you know, threw more punches. And, you know, it was a championship fight. I think I would have got the better win. I would have had it done the Anderson Silva way and make it look exciting for four rounds and then win in the fifth.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you take a look at that fight, I mean, if Frank watched it, it should be pretty obvious to him that standing against you might not be the best idea. But on the other hand, going to the ground against you is probably a much worse idea. So do you think Frank's going to want to keep the fight standing?
I think Frank's comfortable, to, you know, in any aspect. I think he's probably one of the more complete mixed martial artists. He's the longest reigning heavyweight that's in the UFC, you know, 10-plus years. So, he's a guy that definitely knows, you know, the game of mixed martial arts. So, for me, I don't think Frank really, you know, matters. I think he's, you know, confident in his skills. He's a two-time UFC champion. So, I don't think, you know, that's the type of guy I want. I want the guy that's, you know, the best that I can possibly get.
Now, I had a lot of people that have trained with you over the years come into the store after that Junior Dos Santos fight. And the most shocking thing to them wasn't your chin. They knew how good your chin was. It was that you were having a problem with the takedown. Did you hurt your knee trying to take him down? Or was your knee hurt, like you said, in that first round?
Yeah, the first round when I actually fell the second time going backwards, my knee actually just gave out. That was just what I mean? It was just one of those things that... And then after that, you kind of doubt yourself, like, oh, I don't know if I can do a takedown. I don't know if I can get this. I don't know if I can get that. It hurts, but then at the same time, you don't know if you got the strength to, you know, do it, and you don't want to be on your back.
Right, right. Now, obviously, that 2003 Grappler's Quest where you beat Frank has been all over the internet. That was a big day for you. I think you also beat Brandon Vera and Diego that year. Take us back to that day. How big was that day for you?
That was actually, I'd say my coming out party in grappling, but, you know, if you already knew who I was grappling-wise, it's kind of like MMA, you know, like, if you already know who I am, you're like, oh, you know, you expect me to win. But if you're just the new guy coming in, you're like, oh, who's this guy, you know? That day was the day that, you know, Frank was supposed to win the tournament. Beat Frank, tapped out Brandon Vera, and then after that, beat up a bigger, fatter Diego Sanchez when he was 200 pounds plus.
Jesus.
Now, what was your weight that day?
I was a little guy. I was probably about 240, 241.
Oh, wow. Okay, and if you don't mind, what is your weight right now? 2 months out to this fight, what are you weighing in at these days?
Probably, I weighed myself last night, I was 276, so I'm okay. A bigger, stronger, faster than when I was back then.
Now, you were born and raised here in Vegas. Let's talk about some of the gyms. Obviously, we'll get to the country club here in a second, but let's talk about some of the gyms you've trained at over the years. Now, have you trained with John Lewis?
Trained with John Lewis, Train with Mark Lehman, train with Sergio Pena, Ricardo Perez. You name it, I would probably train with him in Vegas. John Lewis at the time, he was the only one that was actually ever teaching in jiu-jitsu. That's where the Fertittas got their start. Dana White got his start was actually with John Lewis. So that's where everybody starts in Vegas if you've been around the business.
That year that you, the 2003, you were represented Lehman. You were with Cobra Kai, I believe, for the Frank fight. I think you were there. How was your relationship with Mark? What did you learn the most from Mark?
I think the most I probably learned from Mark was surround myself with good people.
Yes.
Who would you say is probably the best? Who would you say is the best person you've been around in the Vegas MMA circles?
The best, or like, what do you mean? Like jiu-jitsu, good person? Like, because they're far fetched from all the way, like, because that was my poke with Mark was, you know, surround myself with good people. I learned a lot of lessons with him.
You said that Mark Lehman taught you to surround yourself with good people. If you just put all the Vegas people together, who would you say was the best person you surrounded yourself with after learning that from Mark?
Hence why I have the country club in my house.
Okay.
Actually, who's done. The best guy you ever rolled with, Roy?
The best who I've ever rolled with? You know what? I can't really, you know, that's a tough one. I've never actually had anybody where I've like, oh my gosh, like this guy's awesome. I think different people have different aspects of the game. Like, you know, you're either a good wrestler or good at omoplatas or good at arm bars or, one of my good friends, Jaden, is probably the strongest guy I've ever, wrestled with. And he doesn't, but like jiu-jitsu wise, he doesn't know crap, but he's the strongest guy that like, if he had some skills, he would be the most terrifying guy I would ever want to face. So, I mean, it's kind of hard. Like, I can say all the people I've ever rolled with in my life, from BJ Penn to, you know, to Lehman to Sean Spangler to Holes Gracie to Enzo Gracie to, you know, the list goes on and on and on. But nobody that I'm like, oh, my gosh. But that's how I found out I was actually good. The first time I ever rolled with great people was like, you know, I think the first time I ever rolled with like Rico Rodriguez, when he was getting ready to be the UFC champ, I tapped him out a couple times, and then after that, I was like, who's that guy? And they're like, oh, that's, you know, and then I'm like, oh man, I'm actually pretty good.
So let's turn this around a bit. Who are some of the guys you have trained personally that we may not know about yet, but who are going to break out over the next couple of years, in your opinion?
I have a next guy that's 155. I think I'm going to take him down to 45 because I think he'll be a stud. Is Jose Salgado. I think he's going to be a good up-and-comer. He, you know, I think when Dan Hardy gets here, I think he's going to, you know, change it to the next level. I know he's already kind of made it to the top, but I think he'll be more of a complete fighter so that you have to worry about his left hand all the time versus worrying about getting taken down. Those are probably the two that stick out of my, you know, head. And then there's he just fought over the weekend in Bellator, Bjorgi. I just call him Borgi. but he's the guy that beat Fedor, like 2 years back. He was like 19 or 20 years old in Sambo. He was that guy that when Fedor was untouchable for like 7 years in Sambo and beat him in there. I think he's going to be an up-and-comer. But, you know, he trains with me, so we've been working on that, and I think he's a good heavyweight that's going to make some noise in me. I think he's only like 23 right now.
Let's stay on the country club for a little bit. Who's your training staff there except for you? Who trains people?
Training-wise, I handle all the grappling stuff. Then you got my striking coach, which is James. We just call him the Ninja. And he handles pretty much everything else, from striking to kickboxing to game plans and whatnot. And just, I think, and then pretty much whoever wants to come in and, you know, put their input in, I'm more than happy to listen. And then if it's stupid, it's stupid. If it's good, it's good.
Okay. And how many fighters are currently training with you guys?
Right now we have, what, four guys on a regular basis, and then we have the Tuesday, Thursday open season. Anybody can come and train, and that can range from three. I call it bring your friend to work day. So those days can be anywhere from our standard four or five guys to anywhere up to like 12 to 13.
Let's switch it up a little bit here. Who do you like in the Strike Force tournament, in the Strike Force heavyweight tournament? What do you think is going to end up happening there?
I think whoever's on the left side of the bracket, which was Radum and Overeem and Fedor Gentzel. So Fedor's the only person left is Silva, and then Radum and Overeem. I think whoever's on that side is going to win it. Then I think Josh Barnett's going to probably make it to the finals.
Okay.
Not necessarily he's the best one. It's just how the bracket kind of falls into play.
Right. So yeah. You think he's actually going to be fighting?
I don't see why not.
Okay. Well,
I mean, if it's supposed to be business as usual.
Right.
That's true. If you were asked to be an alternate in that tournament, would you take it?
Most or likely, probably, yeah. Yeah, I mean, why not? I mean, I don't mind having titles in other organizations and then come back to the UFC and take that one too.
Now, speaking of which, the Ultimate Fighter is coming up here with Junior and Brock. I push for you and Frank, and you and Brock, I thought would have made for much better television. But who do you like in that fight?
You know what? From going with Junior, I think if Brock can't get Junior down within the first, I'll give him 2 minutes. I see him getting knocked out.
Okay.
But it has to be 2 minutes. If it's after 2 minutes, doesn't get him down in 2 minutes, then that's Junior all after.
Wow, that sounds scary. Now, what do you think about the situation with Rashad and John Jones? There's been a lot of drama there.
What exactly? Like, from coaching standpoint or from... Well,
the entire angle, how it unfolded, training partners first, then they said we're never going to fight each other. Then Dana got to one of them, got him to flip and say, well, I'm going to fight him if it has to be, to where both guys are actually looking forward to fighting each other now. What do you think of that entire progress or progression?
I think it all depends on, you know, if you're really friends, if you're not friends. Like, I have no problem fighting any of my friends, but the problem that comes down to is how close of a friend are you? Is it business? Because the thing is like, I wouldn't fight any of my friends unless they were making crap load of money. Because it doesn't make sense for me to fight any of my friends, because the way I look at it is, I'm going to win, and then I'm hurting your career. And I don't want to hurt any of my, you know, my friends' careers or anything like that. So like with the John Jones, I think that was with, Greg Jackson, picking up another 205er that, has a lot of talent, and possibly if Rashad wasn't doing so well, kind of like the Don King, you know, going with the winner, it doesn't matter.
Right.
Yeah.
Bobby Heenan for that matter.
Yes. So I think it comes back to just one of those things where if that's the pact, you know, like, hey, we won't fight each other, then stick to it, you know, or put like a pack out there where it's like, hey, if we're going to fight, we need to make 15% of whatever the gate brings in, or, you know, something. It's just like, you just got to pick that number in your head and say, hey, this is what we're going to fight at. Or just say, hey, we're not going to fight. You know, you just got to be honest with yourself and just say, hey, it's possible that we could fight each other. But I think in that one, I think Rashad got hurt because they were told that they weren't going to fight, or they wouldn't fight, and then all of a sudden, I believe John Jones said, I'd fight him, you know, I'm going to have the belt. And I think if you fight for, if you have the belt, then it's one of those things like, yeah, I'm going to fight you because you're the number one guy, and I think I'm better than you. I don't see why friends should fight each other if they don't have the belt, you know, yeah. But, because it doesn't make sense to, you know, unless you have the belt, but right. I think John Jones basically, you know, made him look like a punk when he said, I'll do it, while Rashad was going, well, I won't fight, you know, I'm sticking with his values, and then all of a sudden the values switched and changed, and then now it's like, oh, but that's how a lot of people are in the MMA business, so I don't know why Rashad was new to that.
Okay, so let's just say you're the champion now. And one of the guys who came into the country club and stayed with you guys for like 6 months, he just happened to be the number one contender and logically would probably have to fight. Is that something that you would not do then, going on what you just said, because you were friends? Or is that something you kind of feel is your duty as the world champion to defend against the top guys?
No, I would use my my power, and I'd hope he would use his power to basically make sure he gets paid. I want to make sure you take care of it. Like, there's going to be a winner and a loser, but at the end of the day, we can all be winners on a financial. It's basically kind of like football or basketball. Like, they get paid to be, you know, the superstars. They get paid to be athletes. In our sport, you get paid to be a winner. That's plain and simple. Until that changes, fighting friends is not a thing that you want to do. Like, I'd fight my friend all day long if I know I'm making X amount of dollars, you know, win or lose, that's what I'm doing, because we're athletes. But we don't get paid that way. We get paid to win.
So after you beat Mira at UFC 130, what's going to be next for you? What do you think, who do you think the UFC will give you after that fight?
I told Joe Silva I wanted a big Nog, so I want to fight him in Brazil, and then after that, fight for the belt.
Okay. And anybody who follows you on Twitter, which is always fun, there's always, you guys will get on there and you start talking WWE and cage matches and that. Any chance of a run in the WWE after your career in MMA?
If I can get approved with the UFC, I'd do it right now.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, there's nothing wrong with professional wrestling. It's I call it the male soap opera. It's, you know, it's very entertaining. It's UFC, except you already know the outcome.
Roy, as somebody who's worked for WWE in the past, I can say Vince McMahon would get a coronary just from looking at you. Because he has this image of people having to be 6'5 and chiseled, otherwise they're not good athletes. What's your take on that?
I'm sorry, who said that?
Vince McMahon, WWE owner.
I disagree, because look at, you got the Big Show. You can go down the list. You got, they had a couple different, you know, bigger guys that, you know, just weren't like physically cut. I mean, I can't even think of his name, but the Yokozuna guy, back in the day, used to be the sumo wrestler.
Yeah.
I mean, there's all it is about personality, and that's the biggest thing that sells in the WWE, and that's what sells in our sport too. Is just like, I mean, how many heavyweights do you know that are like look like Greek gods, but then you can't, you know, can't even put a sentence together?
Yeah. Yeah. And now, obviously, Dana wouldn't agree to it, but if Vince called you today and he said, hey, look, Roy, I want you to headline WrestleMania, who would your dream opponent be?
Because it'd be from a business standpoint, I'd love to fight Stone Cold, because it's like, or The Rock, you know, like those are classics. Those are like, Stone Cold would be good, because then it'd be like, because we're both the type of guys that says F the man, so let's do it.
Right. Well, we got to thank you so much for coming on the show, and I can tell you, being extremely biased that I am, I'll be a cage side cheering you on. And I'm sure I'm going to get the look of death from Dana's assistants like I did for that Ultimate Fighter fight with Schaub. Best of luck on your fight with Frank Mirs. Is there anything you'd like to plug before we let you go?
Just make sure everybody, you know, follows me at Twitter at Roy Nelson MMA, and just go to roynelson.com for all the latest updates and whatnot.
Okay, thank you so much for coming on the show, man.
Let him thank his sponsors here.
Oh, yeah, let him thank his sponsors. Go ahead.
Yeah, the other two is, of course, you know, in Las Vegas, the gun store, and also republic.com.
Well, Roy, thank you so much for taking the time. It's always a pleasure with you, and I look forward to seeing you in May.
I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Wow, Mike, that was quite an interview there. I can just picture Roy Nelson in WWE right about now.
So could I. That would be outstanding. Outstanding to see that.
Could you imagine the tirade Vince McMahon would go into if he took one look at Roy Nelson?
I could see Roy headlining WrestleMania, actually.
I mean, he called Hunter fat when he came back from his injury.
Yes, he did. Yes, so. He did. You know, I guess we also saw something this past weekend. They had the UFC Fight Night 24.
Oh, don't remind me. Listen, there is no good way to say this, but Dan Hardy's back is against the wall big time now. And you know how I feel about this, because he's a really good guy. One of the most entertaining guys. He's been on our show several times. But that fight against Anthony Johnson was not pretty, my friend.
He's been on more than anyone.
That is true. Well, except for you.
Well, yeah, except for me. But he's been on, what, 4 or 5 times?
About that.
And it was very, as you said, I guess we can start with that, very painful to watch that fight. And I'll probably never watch it again. And, you know, does he need to move to Vegas and maybe just train nothing but wrestling for 6 months?
I would probably recommend that. I mean, the fact of the matter is he had Roy in his corner. And I kind of figured when I heard that he was going to be training with Roy for a while that they might be training on wrestling defense. But I saw nothing of that in the fight. I mean, the one thing I'm going to say about Dan is he's one tough motherfucker on the ground as far as defense goes. But he couldn't do anything to Anthony Johnson.
No. First of all, Anthony Johnson looked like a heavyweight.
Oh, that's definitely true. But the point is, he didn't even try to not get taken down. If you catch my drift.
No, it was wash, rinse, repeat. It was stand, smile, look excited, ready to bang, get taken down, do no sweeps, try no. Well, he was trying the Kimura, but do nothing really from the bottom. Finally, you get your stand up, you smile again, and it's right back down on your back. Over and over and over. And like I said, I never will watch this fight again. I don't think you will either.
Well, but for different reasons, probably. see, the thing is, I haven't spoken to Dan since, but that first high kick he got caught with and knocked down with, that looked pretty bad.
Yes.
So you never know whether or not he even regained his composure after that. Look, I don't want to make excuses for the guy. He definitely needs some wrestling training, but the question is, how many more chances is he going to get now? That's, what, three losses in a row now?
I think he's going to get one more, and he's calling out Chris Lytle.
That's a fucking great move.
Which would be an interesting fight right there. He said he wants to go out on his shield, and that's one way of putting it. You want to talk about another dangerous guy on the ground, though, too.
And a guy who's never been knocked out in his entire career.
Yeah, so maybe they do that fight. Maybe you go there with that one, and if he loses that, well,
I can promise you one thing though: in that fight, he would either go down in the blaze of glory, or he'd rejuvenate himself. He'd reinvent himself.
Yeah, it's one or the other. It's one or the other. It's so bad. He's such a good guy, you know. And the last fight, you were at cage side for the Condit fight, right?
Uh huh.
And
don't remind me of that one.
Yeah, I know.
But I'm not proud to say, but I called that one.
You did, too.
Yeah, that's what makes me feel worst about it.
You did. You did call that. But this one was very ugly. Hats off to Anthony Johnson for sticking with the game plan and doing what he needed to do to get the W.
True.
Take him down over and over for three rounds, hump him. And
I wish people wouldn't do that. Just take people down and smother them for three rounds. But it's called MMA. It's a legitimate tactic. And if you can't get out from under the guy, tough luck.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, speaking of can't getting out, there was one other fight that I caught. Sean McCorkle and Christian Moorcraft. Was this a beating or was this a beating?
I think beating is the better word here. it kind of looked like a two-round prostate exam or something.
Hey, you had to bring that up, didn't you?
Seriously, Sean McCorkle got violated in that fight.
He was, as JR would say, he was whipped like a government mule. He was dominated in all areas. You know, and hey, listen, he's a funny guy. He's great on Twitter. He cuts a tremendous promo. And he's, you know, he's fun to listen to. But, oof, my God, was he lost.
You know what? He's probably just not good enough to hang in there with the UFC. So, I don't know if they're going to give him another chance, but that's two losses now in a row.
Bad losses.
Bad losses. I mean, let's not take anything away from Christian Moorcraft. That guy is a beast.
But yeah.
Also a diamond in the rough. So it's not like Sean McCorkle has lost to Junior Dos Santos and Cain Velasquez.
That's true.
He lost to two up-and-coming guys. Tall guys, I'll give you that. But still, we're not talking about the cream of the crop here.
No. But a guy on the rise and a guy who actually beat Struve's ass that first round.
Until he got submitted.
Didn't he get his arm pinned behind and got beat?
I mean McCorkle.
Oh, Jesus. McCorkle. That was brutal. He got caught with the standing guillotine. And then Christian just dropped him.
Yep.
Because he crumbled to the mat. You know. And then he put some pictures up over on Twitter of himself with the black eyes and he addressed all the haters and told everybody how good-looking he was and the chicks he bangs and what a great guy he is. So hats off to Sean and happy trails to whatever.
Why is it I see him tapping against Struve? I think he did get TKO'd, right?
He got TKO'd.
Yeah.
I think that was the fight where he got caught and his arm went behind him Struve started uppercutting him from the ground.
For some reason, I have Sean McCorkle in my head tapping out like a little girl.
With Struve?
Just in general. It's just a visual image. But maybe that's just wishful thinking because of reading his Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know what? That's about all we're going to have with him is the Twitter.
Pretty much.
I don't know if they're going to cut him. Most likely they will. You know, but we'll see. We'll see what they do with him. I'll tell you, a guy who's got a fan base and back on the rise is the Korean Zombie. With Leonard Garcia, what did you think of this one?
I had two thoughts, really. Number one, Antonio Inoki would be very proud of him.
Because
that twister looked like a cross between an abdominal stretch and an octopus. And the second thought is it's good. I think it's good he finished Leonard Garcia because Leonard Garcia is the kind of fighter who doesn't really lose a decision after three rounds. So he's the one guy you really got to stop.
Yeah, and it was a fun fight. I mean, it was impossible to live up to their last one.
Right.
But it was still fun, you know, and both guys were a lot more controlled in this one. You know, Garcia wasn't as wild. Zombie was more crisp. He was more in a traditional boxing stance, not that straight stand-up, head straight up, taking punches. You know, and Zombie eventually, like you said, he got him down in that second round. He took his back, and I think there was a second left when he tapped.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
and he
exactly 1 second.
Yeah, and he applied the abdominal stretch, the twister, which he thanked Eddie Bravo.
Which, of course, was invented by Eddie Bravo, right?
Yes, on YouTube.
I think some other guy invented it in the 60s.
Steven Seagal, perhaps.
Probably. No, but seriously, please stop calling that first fight between the two the fight of the decade. You know, yeah. It was a fun slugfest. It was balls to the wall, fall three rounds. But listen, a technical masterpiece it wasn't.
No. No. It was
basically two guys going out there and swinging, some bad kickboxing, but it wasn't really MMA. So,
boy, would I be happy on Memorial Day weekend if Roy got Frank in that twister. Oh, my God.
I would be happy if he got him in a claw hold.
Testicular claw?
Typical Fritz. I'm talking Fritz von Erich claw hold.
Oh, that
not,
claw.
Not Gary Goodrich claw hold. That's a really different thing.
That's a different version?
Pretty much. And I'm pretty sure Fritz von Erich is the only one you can actually do in MMA competition.
Yes.
The other one, yeah. I think, got outlawed pretty soon after Gary Goodrich had that fight.
Yeah. Didn't Lindland use it once?
Lindland?
Yeah.
Against his realtor? Lindland. Okay, which fight was that?
I don't know. I remember he had a little incident.
I kind of blocked Matt Lindland out of my memory, to be honest.
Oh, stop it. How could you?
Yeah, well, I can give you a million reasons.
Yeah. Let's talk about another fight here. Amir Sadala. What'd you think of his performance?
Hats off. I went into the fight. You know, I've never been the biggest fan of Amir Sadala. I thought he didn't really improve after his Ultimate Fighter fights, after his winning the Ultimate Fighter, but he really won me over in that fight. He really did. I thought DeMarcus was going to get him. I couldn't have been more wrong. Hats off, Amir. Great, great fight. Yeah, I couldn't have been more wrong.
Yeah, I was really impressed with him in this one. His knees to the body, his excellent knees. He had good hands, his takedowns, well rounded, you know, and he finished him with elbows and that vicious ground and pound. I was like you. Obviously he had the Baroni fight. He got caught early, came back and dominated Phil, but I wasn't too big on Sadala. And, you know, it was a very, very good performance from him Saturday night. So, like you said, hats off.
And also hats off, I guess, to Phil Davis.
Yeah.
In the main event.
This is another one I don't think I'll ever watch again.
Yeah. You know what? In the first round, I kind of thought, oh, this is going to be like Dennis Seaver and George Saldropoulos all over again.
Yeah.
One guy going for the takedown, not getting it, and getting clobbered. But that fight pretty much turned around when Phil Davis switched from the double leg to the single leg.
Yes, because Nogueira showed great takedown defense in that first round. I actually had him win in the first round.
Yep, so did I. But again, I thought it was very close, and I can see why people would give Phil Davis the round.
Yeah, it was very close. Very close round. You get into that second round, Davis started to land some really nice body kicks. And then, as you said, he went to the single leg, and it was just takedown central. Didn't do too much damage from the top, but he did enough to win. You know, there's two or three guys that have been really, really hyped by the UFC. One of them was Kane, and we saw what he did. The other one was Bones, and we saw what he did. Now, Phil Davis was really hyped this week and was making the rounds everywhere. Listen, he's good, but maybe we want to relax a little bit about him.
Give him time.
Yes.
I think he's just not.
Yeah.
If you take Kane, if you take Bones, those guys are once in a generation guys, type of guys. I think Phil Davis is somebody who's immensely talented, but who's going to need some time to get up there. Nogueira was a big step up in competition for him. Let's be honest about that. Personally, I thought he would blow through Nogueira, but that's because I thought Nogueira was completely shot. So I was kind of surprised when Nogueira did put up some sort of a defense in the first round. It actually didn't look too bad. But one thing I'm going to have to say about Nogueira is, how are you a black belt? How are you on your back for two rounds? And you do absolutely nothing down there?
Yeah.
Maybe Chael Sonnen was right.
Well.
About, you know, black belt from the Nogueira brothers. I mean, seriously. The guy is on his back. He has wrist control. And he's got good grip strength, as we heard from Joe Rogan. But he doesn't do anything with it. Why is that? I mean, are you going to tell me that Phil Davis is a stronger wrestler than everybody Nogueira's ever faced?
Yeah. Who was the other wrestler that did the same thing to him? recently. Who was the other one? Was it Brills?
Yeah, exactly. Jason Brills.
Yeah, it was the same thing.
Yep.
Over and over.
But are you going to tell me that Nogueira and Brills, or that Phil Davis and Brills, are in the same category?
No. No. You know, somewhere Tito was probably watching this last night, shaking his head. Thinking,
talk,
you know.
Talk about a moron. A couple of days before the fight, he pulled out of.
Yeah.
He texts Dana and says, oh, by the way, I'm totally fit now.
I'm 100%.
How dumb do you have to be?
What is going on with him?
I mean, is Tito showing Dana the middle finger and saying, come on, please put me over to Strikeforce?
I think Jen is showing him the middle finger.
Well,
somebody's
got the balls in that family.
there's been a lot of pictures up with Jenna and one of the girls. I don't know what's going on with him. I'm not there, thank God. So I don't know what the deal is with Tito, but he's obviously having some sort of problems.
He's always having problems.
Yes, he brings it on himself, yes.
Listen, I got all the respect in the world for what Tito did when he was young, but the guy hasn't won a fight in 6 years. He's pulled out of more fights than Mike Tyson. And he's probably had about as good a record as Mike Tyson over the past 6 years.
Well, yeah. Actually, Mike might have a better record. I don't know.
What's the deal with him? I mean, is it that he does that? He kind of realizes that he's done and just tries to get a stay of execution every time he has to fight. What's the deal with him?
I don't know. You know, Dana made that comment a few years ago with him, saying that Tito doesn't want to be a fighter. He wants to be on TV, and he wants to be an entertainer, but he doesn't want to fight anymore.
Well,
maybe there's some truth. I mean,
but you can say the same thing about Brandon Vera. So to me, that looks like a match made in heaven. Those two guys against each other. Oh,
why did you bring that up?
Yeah, I mean, seriously, Brandon Vera, all the talent of the world, but hasn't improved in years, and really doesn't look like he wants to fight anymore.
No, and then but that's a guy who comes into the UFC. Wins a fight or two, says he's going to win both titles, gets a big head, his manager, whatever, talks him into holding out for more money. Boy, that served him well.
Yeah, that year off didn't do him any good, did it?
Didn't do him any good, and he's been horrible ever since. Absolutely horrible. So I know what you're saying. Put him in with Tito in a loser-leave-town match.
That's what I'm saying.
Both can they guys, both leave?
Both guys, my suggestion, really. Winner goes to Strikeforce, loser leaves the UFC forever.
Winner goes to Battle of the Barn. And the loser is just retires on the spot.
Listen, it's okay if you're going to have a couple legends in the promotion who just fight among each other. That's fine. No problem with that.
Yeah.
But Tito hasn't won a fight in 6 years. He really hasn't looked good since he fought Vito Belfort, and that was almost just by default because Belfort looked so bad. What are you going to do with the guy?
I don't know. I'm sure now he's taking on Bader, which is a horrible matchup. Oy.
Good luck, brother.
Good luck with that.
He got creamed by Matt Hamill, and now he's getting creamed by Matt Hamill's bigger brother.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. And speaking of which, and brothers and this and that, did you catch any of that Titan fighting over the weekend?
I see that Phil Baroni won his fight, which I'm glad for.
Very painful
right
to watch that. Again, all the pressure on Phil, you know, all the pressure. He needed a win, and he went in there with Nick Nolte and
the actor?
Somebody was acting. And he went the three rounds with him and survived that third. One thing with Phil, he's got a ton of heart. He's not gonna quit. That is for sure. And it's frustrating watching because I know how hard he trains and I know that he has good cardio in the gym. And I know that he eats, sleeps and all he thinks about besides Twitter is fighting. And it's like he gets in there and it's just kind of like he's in quicksand, like he freezes. His reflexes are a little behind. He's been through so many wars, so many fights and pride. And
well, his personal life as well.
Well, yeah, his personal life, but he's got a nice wife. He's got a good wife now, mm-hmm. you know. But it's tough. It's tough to watch that because you know how bad he wants it, and that's what makes it even harder to watch. You know how bad he wants to be around and still be there. But God, man, that third round was. And I love him afterwards too. When they're booing him and he's like, "Thank you so much for your applause. Thanks for the support." And then the guy goes, "You know, you've been questioned on your cardio. Were you tired?" He goes, "I was tired in the second round." You know,
that's exactly what you want to say, right?
Yeah, he goes, "Forget the third. I was tired in the second." Hmm. So, what'd you think of that main event? Or what did you think of Lashley?
Listen, if I never hear the name Bobby Lashley again, it's going to be too soon. I absolutely abhorred him when he was in WWE, and I really, really can't stand him in MMA.
Ugh.
Talk about an underachiever, man.
He wasn't tired.
But everybody else was. Everybody fell asleep.
Oh, my God.
Including the referee.
Including every... Didn't the judge fall asleep?
Oh, fucking hell.
Terrible. He almost knocked himself off. That was just a horrible... I don't even want to talk about him.
Listen, not everybody's cut out for MMA. It's not a problem if you're not, but don't pretend to be.
Exactly.
Same thing with Batista. He's been training for his first fight. Then he gets hit in the face the first time and kind of reconsiders. What the hell's going on there? I mean, hasn't he been watching what's going on inside the octagon?
Does he remember Booker T?
Well, that was a totally different story. Totally different. just as embarrassing, though.
Yeah. You know, I think it killed all credibility with him with Vince.
It's like when Chris Jericho manhandled Bill Goldberg. Oops.
Yeah. Yeah. The old front face lock. The trusty front face lock. It never lets you down.
The only shoot hold Chris Jericho ever learned, and it worked like a charm against the supposed shooter Goldberg.
Yeah, that was the end of him, too.
No, that but anyway, if you're a pro wrestler and want to get into MMA, consider what you're doing. There's a couple of guys who could switch over with like half a year of training. Santino Marella still trains while he's on the road. Him and a couple of the WWE guys, they wrestle around, they grapple around, they spar when they're backstage. He's the type of guy who could actually make it in MMA.
Yeah.
Not everybody's cut out for it.
Just because
you like training, like to train kickboxing, just because you like to watch fighting, doesn't really mean you have to be a fighter. And Bobby Lashley, to me personally, he still goes at it with the mindset of a competitive wrestler, an amateur wrestler.
Exactly.
Win at any cost and do not risk anything in the process. Maybe smart, but it's going to cut off his legs in particular because nobody is going to want to book him.
No. No, I don't want to see him.
And to get back to Phil Baroni, Baroni doesn't have that problem because his fights are always exciting.
He usually has a fun fight. He's got a ton of charisma. He could definitely go right into the pro wrestling. So, we'll see.
I just feel bad for him because he's like, what, 34, 35 now?
Yeah.
I mean, that's no age to be considered washed up. But listen, his fights in the UFC, in his last run, they were not pretty.
No.
So I hope he's going to find his calling. I just hope.
I'm sure he will.
I just hope he doesn't end up like a guy like Gary Goodrich, who just keeps fighting until way after he should be.
I don't think Phil will. I think he'll get involved somewhere else. Someone will be interested in him. But that was right. Tough to watch. Just as some of the fights from the Fight Night 24 was tough to watch. So, but it's been fun talking to you again.
Likewise. Any comments on UFC 128 over in Newark? Anything that stuck out of your mind from that night?
Well, Bones, pretty tough guy, isn't he? I
mean, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was very surprised. I mean, I kind of knew he was winning, but I still thought that Chogan was going to find a way to stop him.
Yeah.
And again, I couldn't have been more wrong. I was shocked by the way he blew through Shogun Hua.
Yeah, I was feeling bad for Shogun. by that second round. I was feeling bad. But I guess my take on that event was Bones looked tremendous, better than I thought he would look. Uriah Faber had a good performance, but not as great as they probably had hoped. And Mirko Krokop didn't do too bad with Brendan Schaub.
You know what? Krokop's been washed up for years now, but he really seemed to be competitive with
Brendan
Schaub the first two rounds.
Very good dirty boxing, dirty elbows in the corner. He was doing good, but once again, we've been screaming for the leg kick. Leg kick. Please throw the leg kick. He finally winds up for it, and it was his demise.
Yeah. See, but the thing is, when you have a really good fight and still get knocked out, you kind of know that it's time to hang up the boots. It was kind of like watching Rich Franklin and Chuck Liddell in a way.
Yeah.
You knew that Chuck was in tremendous shape. He got knocked out. End of story. Here, Krokop came in great shape. He was competitive. He was one of the best up-and-comers in the UFC, but got finished and apparently now got the message that he's not really supposed to be fighting anymore.
Yeah.
And that's fine because it doesn't leave anything. It doesn't leave any questions.
No, nobody's, not at all.
Nobody's going to come out and say, well, I think maybe Krokop has like 3 or 4 good fights left in him. I think that ship has sailed.
Yeah. No, it definitely did. It definitely did.
Speaking of ships that have sailed, Nate Marquardt. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I don't even know what to say anymore. I really don't.
That's your boy.
Listen, one of the nicest guys you're going to find anywhere. Totally cool dude. But his fights... Listen, if I was suicidal, watching Nate Marquardt fight for 3 rounds would probably put me over the edge. And I'm not joking here.
Yeah. It was a little difficult to watch.
Dan Miller fought his heart out. It was so obvious he wasn't in the same class as Nate Marquardt. Figuratively speaking as well as literally speaking, because Marquardt looked like 2 weight classes above him.
Yeah.
But for all the talent Nate Marquardt has, he still doesn't know how to finish. And he's probably never going to know.
Hats off to Jim Miller.
Oh, yeah. Jim looked fantastic.
Yes, he did.
I really wish they had put him, Jim Miller, against Dennis Siver next. And not Dennis against Matt Wyman, which is obviously going to be a great, exciting fight. But I think Jim Miller and Dennis would have been a more interesting fight in the big picture.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they got so many big fights coming up, so many big shows coming up. We got the April Toronto sold out. That's going to be tremendous. Not to mention in 2 months what's going to happen here Memorial Day weekend. And I it's safe for me to say right now that something similar before happened when the guys were in town and we went to that battle at the barn over at South Point. That was the night Shamrock choked Phil. And I can remember reading it on the BlackBerry when we were all sitting there with Brian and Vinny and everybody. And I felt sick the rest of the night. And I'm going to tell you right now, if something bad happens in the Mirror-Nelson fight, I'm going to make an appointment with my shrink already on that Monday. And that could ruin my weekend, but I don't think it's going to happen.
He should come to the arena, though.
I'm there.
Whatever happens there, you can still see Frankie and Greg go at it again.
Listen, I'm definitely there, and I told Roy on Twitter. I told him, I said, listen, you know, if you see a little guinea tripping Frank on the way to the cage, it's me.
I thought the situation.
You know, so let's see what happens. We got some good things, and it was good talking to you. We'll be getting in touch again in a couple weeks.
Definitely. Good talking to you, and, well, I guess I'll see you in May.
Yes, you will.
That's good. Take care. Bye-bye.
Take it easy.
Tough Talk. 100% MMA.